Obviously, in society and culture, some of these topics can be somewhat embarrassing, but I would always say, remember, it's your health and it's who you are and what you are, right? Especially with sexual function, that's very important between individuals. It's very important for individuals. And so that's important to seek help for because it's a large part of our lives.
Life is complicated, but getting healthy doesn't have to be. Welcome to Enlo Medical Center's podcast, Health Matters. I'm your host, Daniela Contreras. Listen to experts and everyday people share real stories and resources to improve our health and well-being. Talking about our health can be challenging, especially when it comes to intimacy. Experts say men often avoid going to the doctor or wait as long as possible before seeing one, even when they know something is wrong. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as many as 30 million men in the U.S. suffer from erectile dysfunction, which can keep them from living fulfilling lives and can hide underlying conditions. That's why it's important to see a urologist regularly starting at age 40. Hi, everyone. I'm Daniela Contreras, and I'm here with Dr. Patrick Scarborough, a urologist at Enlo Urology Services, to talk about this and more in honor of National Men's Health Month. Thank you so much for being here today, Dr. Scarborough.
You're welcome.
So let's begin with a sensitive topic for men's health. Can you tell us what is erectile dysfunction?
Absolutely. Erectile dysfunction at its most basic is just an inability or a difficulty getting and keeping an erection during sexual intercourse when you desire to have sex with another individual.
And what are some of the causes for this?
So the causes are primarily related to diseases that occur, you know, as we get older, usually. Those diseases are primarily cardiovascular disease, so issues with your blood circulation and the arteries and veins that carry blood, and then also diabetes. And the reason for that is that diabetes is related to scarring of the small blood vessels throughout the body.
Oh, wow. And are there any other symptoms or telltale signs?
So very often, actually, erectile dysfunction is the first telltale sign for cardiovascular disease throughout the body. Generally, men will exhibit difficulties with their erections before they start having other cardiovascular issues. So erectile dysfunction is actually the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, for other cardiovascular issues that may come up later.
Oh, that is so interesting. And is there a particular age where men start seeing this more frequently?
So that's a good question. It kind of varies depending on what your underlying health problems are. So generally, people who exercise more and are in better health, they tend to eat better or eat more of the recommended vegetables and grains and associated foods, avoid high sugar containing foods and high salt containing foods. Those individuals tend to see erectile dysfunction later in life. For the average American male, it probably starts to show up in the mid 40s.
Wow, that's pretty young still. Can you tell us what are some of the effects that ED can have physically and mentally on men?
Sure. So from a physical standpoint, it's kind of self-explanatory, a difficulty in engaging in sexual intercourse with desired partners, with the people you care about and love. So from a mental standpoint, obviously that can have a huge impact on an individual's values of self-worth, on their how they perceive themselves to be related to their partner that they've chosen, and things of that nature. So there can be quite a large impact on their mental health and stress levels as well.
And how can they tell when they should start seeking help or seek a provider?
So I would say that once you start experiencing difficulties, even you know, when you normally would have been able to get and keep an erection, and now you're noticing that you're not being able to. Some of the other causes, I didn't mention it earlier, but some of the other causes can be psychogenic. And that doesn't mean that there's a mental issue or problem necessarily. It could be something as simple as stress in life. When you have a lot of stress going on, you tend to not be able to concentrate on other aspects of your life as well, to include sexual function. And so if you start noticing signs that you're having difficulties getting and maintaining an erection, then you should seek help.
That's a great advice. And then what are some of the treatment options?
Absolutely. So back in the old days, there weren't a lot of treatment options. Nowadays, with the advent of the PDE5 inhibitors is what we call it in urology. It's phosphodiesterase 5 inhibitor, otherwise known as Viagra. So the generic name is sildenafil. There's also Cialis, which the generic name is tadalafil, and then Levitra. the generic name for that is vardenafil. Cialis and Viagra are both available as generics that you can get prescribed. Vardenafil or Levitra is not. That's still name brand. That's still under patent. So the cheaper options are Cialis and Viagra. So that's the first step. And then obviously, if those don't work, then there are other treatment options, but they become more invasive, obviously, as you continue. The next step would be injections of medication into the penis. Mm-hmm. And then the final step, if all of that fails, or if you've had surgeries that may impact your sexual function, would be placement of a prosthesis, a penile prosthesis.
So does this mean that it's not something that is necessarily cured?
So usually it's not necessarily cured. A lot of the changes that lead to erectile dysfunction are cardiovascular changes that are very difficult, if not impossible, to reverse. And especially since it's in the very small blood vessels in the erectile portion of the penis. Those are very small, very tiny. And if they scar down, very difficult, if not impossible, to do anything to reverse those changes.
But it's something that can be lived with, controlled, and monitored, as you were saying, maybe with medication.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With the advent of those pills in the last 25 to 30 years, absolutely, it can be managed very effectively.
That's great. And does insurance usually cover this type of medications?
Yes. So I mentioned it before, Viagra and Cialis, or sildenafil and tadalafil, are generic medications now, and so insurance absolutely covers them.
And Dr. Scarborough, is there any way to prevent erectile dysfunction from happening in the first place?
That's a very good question. And the prevention strategies are those that we don't always like to hear, right? Which is to live a healthy life. Make sure you exercise and to do the recommended amounts of exercise, which is 30 to 45 minutes of exercise daily. And then make sure you eat well as well. So avoid those types of foods that may lead to the scarring of the small blood vessels, which are high sugar foods and foods that are going to raise your blood pressure and cause issues with your cardiovascular system, as well as high fat foods.
That makes total sense. And let's switch subjects really quick. Can you tell us a bit about enlarged prostates? What is this? Why does this happen?
So also a very good question, especially for men. The prostate can be described as the bane of man's existence because it continues to grow throughout your life.
Oh, wow.
Under the influence of testosterone, the prostate will continue to grow. So that's why it is very, very common as you get older to experience issues with urination. The urethra, which carries the urine out of the body through the penis, sits or runs through the middle of the prostate. So as the prostate grows, it is very common for the diameter of that tube that comes out of the bladder to get smaller and therefore make urination more difficult. And as I said, it grows throughout your life.
So what are some of the symptoms? How can men identify it?
So the symptoms are those that you would notice if your bladder isn't emptying as well. So very often you get what we call obstructive urinary symptoms, meaning that something is blocking the urine from coming out of the bladder. Those symptoms can include a weak urinary stream compared to what you used to have. They can include taking a much longer time to empty your bladder and feel like it's empty, or feeling like your bladder isn't empty at all, even though you try to go to the bathroom multiple times. Those are what we call obstructive urinary streams. You can also get some irritative urinary streams, although those can often be associated with other conditions as well. But those would include urgency, feeling like you have to go all the time, and that's because you're not emptying your bladder all the way. And frequency, like going every 30 minutes or so, having to run to the bathroom to make that happen. In severe cases, you can get overflow urinary incontinence, which is where there's enough urine in the bladder that the pressure just causes urine to leak out involuntarily. So it can be quite a problem if it's not noticed and treated.
So if I understand it correctly, you were saying that it continuously grows. What would constitute an enlarged prostate, or why does it become a problem?
So it's all based on patient symptoms and their bother. So some patients, they notice that they are starting to urinate more frequently. They used to go every 2 to 3 hours, and now they're going every 1 to 2, or even every 45 minutes, but it doesn't really bother them. They're around bathrooms at work or at school or, throughout at their home that they can very easily go to the bathroom. And so it doesn't bother them. In those patients, we wouldn't necessarily intervene. We wouldn't necessarily recommend treatments because it's not bothering them, as long as it's not causing other health conditions. So blocking the urine can cause urinary bladder stones. It can cause infections. It can cause failure of the kidneys eventually. So if any of those are happening, we absolutely recommend surgical management, but it's all based on symptoms.
Right, like
if it's keeping you up or waking you up at night, yes, or stuff
absolutely.
Like that.
Like if you're getting up 4 or 5 times a night, it's considered normal to for less than 2 times per night to get up. So 1 time is normal, 2 or more is not normal.
Oh, wow. That's a good point. Yeah. And what are some of the treatment options for enlarged prostate?
So we would start with medication, with medical management, and those we usually use what's called an alpha blocker. And that's one that many people have heard of. Flomax is probably the most well-known. The generic name for that is Tamsulosin. It's also available generic, so insurance does cover that. And then if that isn't working well or isn't working as well as one would like, then we generally add a second medication, and that's one of the dihydrotestosterone blockers. And that's known as finasteride, or Proscar is the brand name for that, or dutasteride, and Avodart is the brand name for that. And that actually shrinks the prostate. Oh, it does take several months for that to take effect, and so we usually start with a faster-acting alpha blocker.
Are any of these treatments painful, or do they cause any problems?
So they do have side effects. Every medication has a side effect, right? The side effect for Flomax is if you take it with other medications that can lower blood pressure, you can get dizzy and lightheaded, have orthostatic hypotension is what that's called. So we recommend breaking those apart. Same if you take it with Viagra or Cialis, keep them about 4 hours apart to avoid that hypotension. Also for younger men, usually in their 40s, if they're concerned about fertility, Flomax can cause retrograde ejaculation. And that's where, because it's relaxing the bladder neck and the prostate, the ejaculate doesn't go out, it goes backwards into the bladder. From a health perspective, it's not going to hurt you. You just urinate that out later. But it can be bothersome during sexual activity, and especially if fertility is still desired. For finasteride, the main side effect is it can, in about 25% of men, cause decreased sex drive because it inhibits testosterone pathways.
Very interesting. So, Dr. Scarborough, are there any surgical treatments for an enlarged prostate?
That's a good question, and there are, absolutely. One of the newest to come out is UroLift. And that's a less invasive surgical management for an enlarged prostate. What it does is it puts sutures or stitches inside the prostate, and it's done through the penis with no other incisions while the patient's under general anesthesia, so completely asleep. And it puts those sutures in and basically just pops open the prostate. It's very, very effective, actually. It's been shown to be as effective in most of the studies as the gold standard, which is where you shave open the prostate, and that's known as a transurethral resection of the prostate. And we still do that as well in very large prostates or prostates where the UroLift didn't work, but the UroLift is a much less invasive management technique.
Does insurance usually cover UroLift?
Yes, absolutely.
Nice. And are there any risks associated with the UroLift?
So just like any surgical procedure, it does have some risks. Probably the biggest is some bleeding afterwards. Mm-hmm. Especially if the patient had been on anticoagulation, so having their blood thinned. They can get some bleeding that may require admission to the hospital and a catheter. You can get some urinary retention afterwards, and so you may need to go home with a catheter for a few days, a Foley catheter draining the urine out of your bladder. And you can sometimes have some associated pain, especially if the suture gets kind of embedded in the pubic bone. But that's during the training techniques we're taught to avoid that. So that's actually pretty rare.
Oh, very good. And Dr. Scarborough, do men need a referral to see a urologist?
Usually you do need a referral to see the subspecialist urologist, and that comes from your primary care physician or provider. And you just ask them if you can see the urologist, and they'll look at your situation and determine if that's the best step forward and then provide the referral.
Great. And what would you say to men that might feel embarrassed to seek help or to go to a urologist?
I would say, you know, obviously in society and culture, some of these topics can be somewhat embarrassing, but I would always say, remember, it's your health and it's who you are and what you are, right? Especially with sexual function, that's very important between individuals. It's very important for individuals. And so that's important to seek help for because it's a large part of our lives. And I would say urination is absolutely required for survival.
Yes.
So you have to empty your bladder. And if you're having issues with that, you should see somebody who can direct you. Now, a lot of times, the primary care providers will go ahead and try some of these medications first. Usually one of them, like Flomax is a common one that will be tried first. Viagra is a common one prescribed first. But then if those fail, absolutely get in to be seen by a urologist to help further manage those.
Perfect. That's good to know. Is there anything else that you would like to add that I didn't ask you?
No, I think we've covered it.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
And thank you all for tuning in. If you'd like to learn more about Enlow's urology services, visit www.enlow.org/urology. See you next time on Health Matters.
If you have a story you would like to share, let us know. Email us at healthmatters@enlow.org. Let us know your thoughts about our podcast and what you want us to explore. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening to Health Matters. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, give us a thumbs up, or share it with someone who might benefit from the information. Health Matters is a production of Enlow Medical Center.